If you're going to buy something, buy the best with what you can afford. And we know someone who can help with that. And if you somehow get taken, well, we also know someone who can help with that too. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with the CEO of Consumer Reports. For some of us, when it comes to making a purchase, CR is the go-to resource. So if you're a fan of Consumer Reports, stick around. I think you're going to enjoy the conversation. But to start us off today, we're fortunate to have the Commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection visit with us for a few minutes. Commissioner Michelle Siegel spoke with us over the holidays about how the department operates and the different services it provides. And we asked her back today specifically because we want to find out what to do if, even with good research and due diligence, we get ripped off. Commissioner Siegel, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So here it is. I go out, I make a purchase, I do all the right things, and then somehow I get ripped off. I get taken. What do you suggest that we do if this happens to us?
So there's a number of things you can do, and I'm glad you started it by saying you've done all your research, because obviously the best thing is to avoid a problem in the first place by doing that research. But, you know, one thing we try to do is encourage consumers, especially when you, based on your research, you feel comfortable you're dealing with a legitimate company, is see what you can do to resolve it yourself. Very often, if you send a clear letter or email or make a call to customer service, often businesses will be responsive. They want to have happy customers. So explain to them what you expected the product or service to be, what you got, and what you want to resolve it. Do you want your money back? Do you want a replacement product? Do you want a credit? So very often, consumers can really feel empowered and are able to help themselves. But suppose you try all of that and the business just isn't getting back to you or isn't giving you what you want. You should definitely feel comfortable. Connecticut's actually somewhat unique in the country. We have a dedicated agency for consumer protection. We have a complaint center here. It is staffed with really dedicated employees who are committed to trying to help people resolve these problems. So let us know what's going on. You can send us a written complaint at dcp.complaints@ct.gov, and we'll take a look, and we have a fair amount of success helping to resolve these types of disputes.
What about if the dispute isn't going anywhere? I know some people nowadays take to social media, and I know a lot of companies are very anxious about that because once it gets out there, they're afraid their sales are going down.
That's certainly an avenue that, you're right, has proven successful. So, you know, you can go on the company's Facebook page, perhaps, and post something if they have that, or through Twitter. So that's certainly an available option for consumers. And if you reach out to the company through their social media account, that may be another avenue to try to resolve it yourself.
But what happens if you do all these things, if they contact your department, if they do the social media, and still nothing happens? Does a consumer have recourse at that point?
Well, hopefully, either through your own efforts or working through us, we can get everything resolved. There's always, depending on the value, of course, of the product or service, you can always go to court. So particularly for large purchases, you know, or if it's a few thousand dollars, there's a small claims court. And so there are judicial options for most purchases. That's probably, you know, not practical, but that is definitely an option available to people. But hopefully reaching out to the company, they're going to want to keep their customers happy. If that doesn't work, reaching out to us and us contacting them and asking them to explain the situation and see what they can do to help the consumer, things can get resolved that way.
Will just the threat of going to small claims court sometimes push a company in the area of resolution?
I'm sure every company is different. I think you can certainly try that and see what happens. Or, you know, it's not particularly hard. You don't have to be a lawyer to go to small claims court, so you can. They have a really good website. Look up the Connecticut Small Claims Court and sort of understand their process. But really, you know, going to court, probably you want to make that a last resort. If you can solve it with a call to customer service or by sending in an email to the company or contacting them through social media, that may be a faster way. And then, of course, come to the Department of Consumer Protection if that's not working. And we often have success resolving these things when maybe the consumer was not getting anywhere on their own.
What's the trend like nowadays? Do you find more people complaining, dissatisfied, or has it gone in the opposite direction?
We're not really seeing a dramatic change. It holds steady, and we're seeing much more complaints or problems now with products being purchased online, less from the brick and mortar. And that's probably just consistent with more people are purchasing things online. So it ebbs and flows, and, there's different things depending on the season as to what people are complaining about.
Is there anything, I know you were talking to us about some of the online scams that have been taking place over the last few months. Some of them were quite surprising to me. Anything new that people should be watching out for?
It's a lot of the same things that maybe take slightly different forms. So the best bet as a consumer is to do your homework, whether it's reading consumer reports, that I understand you're talking about next, or going online, write the name of the company and the word scam or complaints and see what comes up and see if what other people's experiences with that business has been. Obviously, online, you have that issue where with a physical store, you kind of know where to find the store if you're unhappy. If it's an online presence, you really want to be comfortable that you understand who you're doing business with and that they're going to be there to stand by their product.
And caveat emptor, right? Buyer beware. Commissioner Michelle Siegel, Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Commissioner, always a pleasure. We thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And we recorded that interview with Commissioner Siegel Friday morning, but we are live now, and I'm happy to welcome Marta Teodo, the President and Chief Executive Officer of Consumer Reports, to our studios. I have some friends and family members, I was telling you about this before, who were so excited that you were going to be on today because they're the biggest fans of your magazine, and they all want to know, how can I get a job at Consumer Reports? What is it about CR that inspires such passion?
Well, thank you, Ron. That's very moving. And I will tell you this, there is a lot of passion inside Consumer Reports as well. And knowing how much people really value what we do is really inspiring. And I would just venture to say that, there's a purpose to what we do. We're mission driven. Mm. We have been part of the ecosystem of making the marketplace safer and more transparent for all consumers for 80 plus years. And our mission hasn't changed. So much about the consumer experience is changing, which is why it's an exciting time to be at Consumer Reports right now.
Take us back to the beginning. When did CR first come about?
1936.
That's amazing.
It truly is. I mean, we are an iconic American social enterprise, and it really came about because the two founders recognized that it was a balance of power issue, that consumers were losing their ability to go into the marketplace and have real agency. Products were getting more complicated, and the rise of Madison Avenue and advertising, a lot of false claims. How can you judge whether something is living up to the claims?
This cigarette is good for you. It'll make you stronger.
That's right. Or this mouthwash cures the common cold.
That's right. All those crazy things that went on back then. So 1936, was it based just in New York, or where was it based out of?
It was in Westchester, in New York at the time, and we've always been there.
You're out of Yonkers now, I should say.
We are out of Yonkers now. We have an office, of course, in Washington, D.C., which is where our policy experts reside. And, of course, we have that wonderful auto test center in Connecticut, Colchester, which we purchased in 1983, where we test all our cars.
I can't wait to talk about that one a little bit later. And just as an aside, I'm assuming that the car issue or online is probably the most popular?
Well, it is extremely popular right now as cars get more and more complicated. And as a matter of fact, just last week, we released one of our most popular issues of the year, which is The Best and the Worst.
Mm. And just for those who haven't seen it yet, I have. What is The Best? But it all goes according to category, right? Because you have SUV, wagons, sedans, and so on.
Well, I guess what I'd want to underscore is how The Best and Worst has changed over the years. And we, of course, rate and review cars. But our mission is really to bend the marketplace, to put consumers first, safety, quality, reliability. So it's not just the road test, but it's also the millions of people we survey every year asking not just what it's like when you drive it off of the lot, but how's it performing for you 6 months in, a year in? And something we did for the first time this year, and we let the car manufacturers know this ahead of time, is that you can't even make it into the top 10 if your emergency and safety technology is not standard and not a luxury item. Think about it. We were one of the first to demand that seatbelts be standard. They weren't. And so now, fast forward, you've got this remarkable technology, forward collision warning, emergency braking. We now know that it saves lives. But for a lot of cars, there's still add-ons.
Marta Tejado is with us. She is the president and the CEO of Consumer Reports. I keep saying magazine, but it's because that's what I grew up with. It's so much more than a magazine, though, because most of your subscribers nowadays do it digitally, right?
Well, that's right. I'm not going to divulge your generation, Ron. I'm going to
a little bit older.
But here's what a lot of people don't know. We have always been a nonprofit. We have always been independent and supported by our members.
That means no ads, no ads whatsoever. You buy all your products.
Absolutely no advertising. We buy all the products ourselves just as if we were consumers. So we don't take any special giveaways from companies who want us to test something. Absolutely not. And I think that's what's earned us the trust, not just of the public, but also manufacturers and government regulators as well. I think they can—they know what they're getting from us. It's scientific. It's tried and true, and completely and totally independent. So that's been our model since 1936.
How do you keep the budget going, though? Because everything you're talking about doing—that means when you go to your test track in Connecticut, that means you're buying all those cars to test.
That's exactly right. That means all 50 cars that we test a year at that track, we purchase. And I think one of the things to keep in mind is that we have 6 million subscribers. And you talk about our magazine subscribers. They're some of our most loyal members. But where we're seeing growth is in the digital side. And we have just as many digital subscribers. And what's really exciting is to see the 40% growth rate in the visitors to our site. At CR.org. Any given month, 14 million visitors come to our site.
14 million.
That's right.
It's pretty much the same with WSHU.org. I mean, that's about the number that we get. I'm only kidding. That's a lot.
And they're coming to us for a whole host of things. Yes, when they're making those big purchases, but it's also maybe they're going on that vacation they've been waiting to go to in the rainforest, or maybe just upstate and they need some mosquito repellent. Well, a lot of mosquito repellents have claims on them. Are those claims real? We put them to the test just as hard and fast as we do to cars.
I have CR on my Twitter feed, and you're talking about, because I think some people, like you said, they don't understand that you don't take any ads, you don't take money, you don't take gifts from manufacturers. But at the meantime, at the same time, it's not just about cars and dishwashers and so on. So on the Twitter feed, I was going through this before, it's kind of, you're kind of like a Swiss Army knife. There were tweets on tips to keep a brain healthy. Is it too cold to paint? Cars losing recommendations because of reliability issues, stages of heart disease, cable TV bills, how to make your dishwasher last longer, and type 2 diabetes. And I think that's all within the last day or two.
Thank you for that exhaustive list. You could find that list changing on a daily basis and even within a day. And why is that? Because in the past, I think folks came to us to get that review, to get that rating. But the reality is we do so much more than that. We want to be a consumer's partner throughout any life stage, whether they're buying that first home and have to understand what they're doing when they go get financing, getting that first car, getting that car seat, or trying to figure out what is the right student loan for them so that they don't find themselves in debt for 30, 40 years. So it's the ratings and reviews, but it's also the journalism. There is so much more information out there. And I think what we're seeing is that there may be more information, but there's certainly a lot of doubt and trust is waning in the minds of the public and the reader. Who can I trust? What information is transparent and honest? And what is actually just promotions and advertising?
Absolutely. Because look, we've all shopped online, and we've done it through Google Shopping, Amazon, Walmart, whatever. And then I go on to the products and I see the reviews. And the reviews can drive me crazy at times, because someone will write a review saying, I got this product, but my review is not based on this free product that I received. They in no way are going to influence me. And you look at that and you say, come on now.
We all do it. It's human nature. You go on the internet and you want to know what your peers think about something. And that's fine. That, like I said, that's human nature. What we have to realize is that a lot of those platforms and a lot of those reviews are gamed, or they're paid for reviews. They also, like I said earlier, they might tell you if a car seat cleans up well, but they're not going to tell you how it performed on the crash test. And we're the only ones who do that. There's really no one else quite like us. We've got about 60 labs. As I said, we test cars at the test track. We've got about 140 engineers, writers. So it's an extraordinary diversity of skills that really inform the information that we provide.
Is safety the number one concern, would you say?
Safety has always been front and center. And I would say that our overall mission has always been to make the market more transparent, fair, and safer. So that's always been the case. Safety, at reliability, quality, performance, it's all three of those things.
I know that you worked in the past with Ralph Nader, and we had Mr. Nader on the program a number of weeks back, and he joined us on the phone from his apartment here in Connecticut. And he is considered to be one of the, would you say, founding fathers of the modern consumer protection movement back in the early 60s. I know Consumer Reports started before he did what he did, but in the 60s, he got a lot of things moving with unsafe at any speed and automobile safety. And he and I were having a conversation, and I said, I still don't understand why in this day and age that the government isn't doing more to police manufacturers and to help consumers. Why is there a need for Consumer Reports to step in for something like that?
Well, you have to watch the watchdog just as closely as you watch the manufacturer. And if you think about the speed with which products are being developed now, and the fact that we are going from a hardware world to a software world, government regulators can't keep up with the pace of innovation. And so that is an enormous challenge. And so what we're confronting really is sort of the next frontier of consumer rights and protections in a digital world. A lot of the successes and many of the things that Ralph championed in his heyday don't apply to the digital world. They apply to the hardware world. And that's a place that we're really paying quite a bit of attention to.
Give me some examples if you can.
Okay, well, think about the products that you own. We now live in a connected world. And what we mean by that is that your telephone may be talking to your car, and your car may be also tracking how far you are from your home security system, and also your thermostat. So as you get closer to your home, your thermostat is increasing. So there's software that's coursing through all our products. The challenge is the data that software is collecting, the privacy, the control of the data, your own personal data. There aren't any standards out there to ensure that you're in control of that data. And to give you an even sharper example, because there are no standards out there, we have developed a set of protocols that we call the digital standard, by which we can begin to evaluate products for their privacy. And so we started looking at smart TVs. And how hackable are they? Are they listening to your conversation if you're there? Same thing with home security cameras. We found some glitches in one of the TVs as well as the home security cameras. And as disturbing as that is, the upside is we were able to talk to the manufacturer and get that firmware fixed. So, at the one hand, we're being dazzled by these products. On the other, there aren't the consumer protections and the rights in place yet.
The lack of privacy nowadays drives me nuts, because I remember one of the very first novels I read as a kid was Orwell's 1984. And I remember long discussions with my English professor about this. And even last night, as I'm sitting on the couch and I was reading Consumer Reports and I was doing some research for tonight's program, but at the same time, I was going through an insurance statement that I had received recently. And on page 4, page 5 of the insurance statement, in little legalese at the bottom of it, it says, "We may share all your information with legal authorities." And I'm thinking, what? Why would this be out there? Why would my insurance information be given to my police department or the FBI or somebody else?
Oh, that's the fine print.
It's always the fine print.
The fine print has always been there. What's new is that now they're monetizing you and your habits and your information and selling those to advertisers. And they're able to create a dossier of what is Ron like and how much is that worth to a variety of different advertisers. Think of it this way. A lot of us think that our car insurance is based on our driving record. And what one of our investigative projects unveiled is that it's not. It's actually based on an algorithm, an algorithm that, of course, is subjective and created by the company. It's an algorithm that bases it more on where you live, what your income is, what your race and ethnicity is. So what we uncovered with it, the algorithm was, in fact, discriminatory.
It has nothing to do with my driving history.
Nothing to do with your driving history.
This I did not know.
That is not transparent to the public.
So if I'm a white male of a certain age, living in a certain area, making a certain income, that's how it's based. That's how my insurance
rates are. That's what our research uncovered. So in addition to testing things, we're also looking for those hidden stories. The other example I would give is hidden fees. There are a lot of hidden fees in your cable bill. If you've stayed in a hotel lately, you've probably seen some fees there that popped up on your bill that you didn't know about.
Yes, indeed.
So
it happened to me just the other week.
It's that hidden fee economy that we're trying to report on to raise awareness.
$25 a day for the hotel that I stayed in, and you know what it was for? They said it was because you got free internet. Free internet is how they phrased it, and then I get a charge at the end of it. And they said, plus you get a free newspaper. There was a newspaper down in the lobby that you had to go and grab one copy of. And at the end of the day, they say, $25. And you say, okay, $25, you stay there for a week. It kind of adds up. And like I said, hidden fees can drive you crazy. I got an email the other day from one of our listeners in anticipation of this show. And do you know what they wrote? They said, robocalls. Please ask her about robocalls and what can be done about this.
Thank you for asking that. Every time we have gone out and surveyed our members, that is top five. Like, how do you make these things stop? And we've had great success in mobilizing our members. Some folks think they can be part of the CR community and benefit from all our products and services. But the other way we make change happen is that we raise the voices of our members. And this is what one can do when you've got 6 million members and they're telling you this is a pain point. So we're able to mobilize that, take that to decision makers and elected officials and say, we need to do something about it. What kind of software can these telephone companies provide to help our members and anyone in the public prevent these robocalls from disrupting their lives?
Driving here today, coming up the Merritt, I got three of them. Three within a 25-minute drive. I mean, it's insane nowadays, because especially if you're driving, if you think it's important, and I have one of those scam tools on my phone, but it didn't catch them. So something is going on where they're now even able to bypass that. It is annoying. What are the others in the top five?
Well, I think the digital privacy, trying to understand, you know, what my rights are. I think everyone, all of us are reading every day about security breaches. And why is the consumer the last to hear about it? It's very troubling. What do you do when you find out that there's been a breach in your bank? So we try every time this happens, and you could find it in our on our platform. What do you do? What should you do? How do you prevent? How do you go about freezing your credit scores? So we try to do that. That's happening every day. unfortunately.
And unfortunately, for anyone who has been through this, trying to get your credit frozen, your credit score frozen on Experian or any of the others, I believe there are three or four majors that you actually have to do each one.
Each one.
It is time consuming. I have done it. And then if you want to unfreeze it for a temporary, it's time consuming. Back to the drawing
board.
There has to be an easier way to help consumers.
Well, that's exactly right. And by raising our voice collectively, I think we're much stronger for it. I'd say the other thing consumers are troubled by is food.
Mm.
Trying to understand just how much, whether it's chemicals or how safe their food is. They're seeing, we just saw last week that the CDC has not been able to get to the bottom of the latest salmonella outbreak mm-hmm. in chicken. And we saw it in E. coli on romaine lettuce,
don't eat that.
The CDC sort of dragged their feet a bit on what was happening across the country. And we immediately pulled it from our cafeteria, and we decided, based on what we were tracking, we felt we needed to tell the public and let the public decide. And so independently of regulators, we were able to put out a release that I think was picked up by every outlet. And that's let consumers decide for themselves. So we've doubled down on our food testing, and we're seeing some pretty disturbing things. We just completed a series of tests on children's fruit juices, and we discovered a lot of heavy metals, cadmium, mm-hmm. arsenic. So we're asking a lot of questions about that. We're also seeing way too many antibiotics in our food supply. And mm-hmm. the more antibiotics we use and allow to be used in meat, the less effective they're going to be when you really need them.
How many lobbyists do you have in Washington?
We have experts. We have policy experts.
I'm sorry. So, is lobbyist the wrong word?
That's always been who we are. The gentleman who leads our team there is actually an engineer and used to work at at NHTSA, one of the agencies for highway traffic and safety.
Mm-hmm.
So these are people that understand the issues.
I guess now that I think about it, lobbyist kind of has a negative connotation nowadays, because if you're lobbying, people thinking lobbying for pharmaceutical companies or something like that. So
lobbying for pharmaceuticals, and also perhaps that pharmaceutical company is also funding a particular campaign or a particular elected official. Of course, we don't do any of that.
Right.
We generate our point of view based on our testing and the science and the rigor and the impartiality of it. So if we do have a bias, I would say it's putting consumers first.
Do you have any champions on Capitol Hill, and anyone who really is, you think, strong for consumer rights, for consumer protection?
We spend a lot of our time trying to grow more champions. And so we just had an election, a lot of new elected officials. And so my team spends time sitting down with their staff and explaining what is the state of play on consumers and consumer rights, and how do we foster more competition in the marketplace, more transparency.
Mm.
And I think that's what I have discovered, that's not a right or left issue. When you're talking about fostering competition, giving people choice, everybody listens up. And I think that's been a real strength of ours over the years.
You have a lot of data in your computers. I mean, it's just lined up from years of testing. Matt, how do you share that? I'm sure some manufacturers are saying, you know what, if you really want us to improve, can you share things with us? What kind of safeguards do you put in place?
Well, as you can imagine, an organization like ours that has to maintain its independence and impartiality, the integrity of our data is paramount. So we have our intellectual property is safeguarded, but we also know that that data is powerful, and it has the ability to unlock an enormous amount of potential for consumers. Consumers do consume a lot of the information and the tools that we provide. That's a fraction of the data that we collect. So if you think about the way we track data over time, reliability studies, it's now we're thinking about in a world where we used to just wait till that product was formed and shaped and mm-hmm. then test it and ding it, it's already out in the public space. So now that we have the ability and the power of data is to look at that data and track it over time. And how do you have upstream impact? How can you actually take the data and the opinions and the experiences that our consumers are having with products and services and influence the design and have consumer-centered design, not wait for that product to be a part of it? So in the past, there were a lot of, you know, one-off conversations that we would have. A company would say, well, like, why did I score so badly? And we would try to sit down and talk to them about it.
Oh, they would actually come to you and you would?
Absolutely.
Because your time is valuable. And so these manufacturers would come to you and you would
still say,
I'll talk with you.
As I said, the independence and rigor of our scientific research draws them to us in a way that they respect us. And our research bears that out when we ask them, what do you value about us? And being able to look at that data across with a number of manufacturers and say, this is what we're seeing. You can make this gear shift safer if you did the following.
Hmm.
That's a way, that is a very new way of us for us to think about how you have upstream impact before that product reaches the consumer market. So I think data is incredibly important, and making sure that we use that data in a more fulsome way with a variety of different audiences. That means we sit down with regulators as well. So we just did a report on auto safety, for example. And we had a webinar. And that webinar, we had over 143 participants from industry as well as other consumer groups as well as regulators. So yes, we serve consumers, but we also have to have impact on the marketplace.
There must be some manufacturers who shun you because you're very honest in your reviews and you have to tick off some of these manufacturers, right?
That's just day to day. I can give you tons of examples. Samsung, let me just pick on Samsung. We found some glitches in their smart TV and we pointed it out to them. Initially, yeah, a little pushback, but last year they came back. They addressed the issue. Same thing with Tesla. Remarkable cars. We track them for the technology that they have been such a trailblazer in, and now we're seeing that technology migrate to other fleets and other manufacturers. But we also discovered in our testing that one of their sedans was braking as if it were a pickup truck, which is not acceptable.
Not for that price.
Not for that price. We spoke to them, and within 24 hours, this is the first time this has ever happened, they had an over-the-air software fix that addressed the braking problem. That's truly remarkable in terms of safety and technology. And I would say the same thing for the Samsung exploding phone, if you remember that story.
I do.
Recalls has been sort of the bread and butter of keeping our consumers safe, informing them. It's very hard to reach all consumers when they have a product that's not safe. But when Samsung turned off that phone, that was a 100% shutdown recall. So the digital world, there's some things about it that are not transparent to us, but there are also many ways in which we can create a safer environment for consumers.
Must make you feel good.
I am so fortunate to be able to get up every day and go to work and surround myself by the most amazing writers, researchers, testing geeks, and just consumer advocates every day.
Consumer nerds are fun, aren't they?
Every day.
Shopping with them is fun.
Shopping with them is fun, and you could see that if you. And what I would love to do is invite all of you to see what I see every day, and fortunately, I can do that now because we just. This year started a television program, which we're really excited about.
And this is on Saturdays, I believe.
Saturday mornings on NBC, and you can also watch it on Hulu and on demand at your own leisure. And why do we do it? Because there is so much going on in our labs. It's a way to bring the public into those labs. It's a family show. It's something you could sit down and watch with your family. We're really excited. We just got our first Parent Choice Award.
Mm.
It's a very educational program. And we're excited also to be having it in Spanish language Telemundo, which is a new audience for us and one that we're really excited about.
You know, when I say consumer nerds. I mean that in the nicest way, because I'm going to give you an example. I'm in a store recently. I'm looking at buying something. And as I'm going there, a nice lady comes next to me and she's on her phone and she goes, "Have you considered this?" And then someone on my other side joins in the conversation. Before you know it, there are four or five of us standing there looking at this one item, where to go, what might be better, what's a better price, price per unit, the whole thing. And I'm looking around, I'm like, are you kidding me? And this conversation went on for a few minutes. Good, informed consumers, but right at that moment, on their phones.
Well, that's exactly right. The consumer journey is different. So in the past, you would take that magazine and you would do your shopping in those brick and mortar stores. And right now, you still want that shopping assistant and you want that trusted advice, but you're on a device.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be where consumers are. So we love that you're still reading the magazine, but we're also creating a lot of different digital products so that we can help you. We've got the app. We've got a new product we call Ask CR. Some of you aren't those investigative consumers of every bit of knowledge. You just want to pick up the phone and call an expert and say, what should I do? And now you can do that. It's one of the member benefits that we offer, Ask CR. But let's say you're a champion digital shopper. You get on those digital platforms and you're shopping and you're reading those reviews, but you're not trusting them all quite as much. We now have a browser plugin, which is a form of a shopping assistant if you're a member. So when you're on these shopping platforms, across the top of your screen, you're also seeing what we think. And what if you're looking for that vacuum cleaner and you're on a platform and it's telling you this is the best one? Well, how do you know it's the best one? How do you know they're not serving you up the choice that they're manufacturing?
Mm.
And so across the top, as a CR member, you get to see, well, what do we think? Where do you think you should be? What kind of product should you be buying? And I think why that matters is people don't want to get off of the platform and go somewhere else. They want a seamless experience as a consumer.
Absolutely.
And that's what we have to provide for them.
And this is across all platforms. So you can be on Internet Explorer, you can be on Chrome, you can be on Firefox, whatever. That's on your desktop, but it also works on all the different phones.
That's correct. We're in beta on some, and we'll get to all of them, you know, once we conclude the beta. I think that's incredibly important for us to be doing that.
Tell me a little bit more about Ask CR, because I find that fascinating. So that means that today, let's say I need a vacuum cleaner and I'm planning to head down to Costco or wherever, Target. But before I go, I simply dial a number and say, what's the one that you recommend?
And what you're going to get is a response that says, well, tell me more about yourself. What price point do you want? What kind of, do you have any allergies? Are you looking for a vacuum that might be more effective if you're allergic to some allergens in the air? So, because remember, every consumer is different. The best product for you may not be the best product for your neighbor.
Mm.
And that's the kind of personalized service you're going to get.
Sounds like a concierge service.
That's exactly what it is.
I got the right one there. I have a question here for you about Alexa and Siri and Google Home and so on. I know we talked about privacy concerns before, but at the same time, is this something that Consumer Reports can utilize?
We already do.
You do, okay.
So smart speakers, what we know about smart speakers is that 1/4 of US homes have a smart speaker now. And what we know that in 5 to 10 years' time, most of our searches are going to be voice searches. So you think about apps now, you think about Ask CR, we're already on the voice platforms because that's where many of us are going to be in the future. So that is a technology that you're going to see explode in the coming years.
But at the same time, are you worried about balancing the
At the same
the
time,
privacy
the privacy with- issues that we talked about earlier absolutely apply. That is a digital device, and so when are they collecting information? What are they doing to that information? That work is really the next frontier of consumer rights and protection.
Mm.
As I said earlier, those rules have not been written. We need to grow of a community of consumers that are passionate about that. And that's something we're spending a lot of time with building at Consumer Reports as well.
Who writes those rules? Whose responsibility will that be? Does that come down to Congress? Is this a new type of law? Does it go through the Federal Trade Commission?
Well, just this very week, there are hearings on digital privacy on the Hill. No surprise, most of the folks testifying are corporate.
They're against it.
So we're not happy about that. Mm. And so we're speaking loudly. We're mobilizing our activists, which we have about a million of, to raise their voices about the kinds of laws. And so a lot of the digital standard and testing that we do is, in effect, to start to incentivize the market to put consumers first. And it does work. You can bend the marketplace. What we saw when we started looking at peer-to-peer apps and smart TVs and home security systems and cameras, when you start grading them for privacy, then you start getting calls from the manufacturer and saying, explain to us the testing. We want to be number one. Mm. That's exactly the kind of behavior we want to incentivize. But when there aren't any rules or regulations and consumers aren't aware of the problem, how do they make judgments? Once you start arming them with the information they need, they're going to reward the manufacturer that protects their privacy.
As I mentioned before, it's digital privacy has always been an issue with me. But I find that when I talk with many millennials or younger teenagers, it doesn't seem to concern them. They kind of accept the loss of privacy as standard. And when I mention the fact that others are maybe profiting off their information or their information isn't secure, I get the shrug. Like, what's the big deal? You know, why are you worried?
I hear that anecdote a lot. Our research doesn't necessarily bear that out. There's privacy and there's security. You just saw these headlines about Facebook. Some of the largest defectors of Facebook are, in fact, that generation. Mm. They don't like to be scammed. They don't like to be taken advantage of. It's the same thing. So, yes, they're giving up more of their information. They're digital natives. But they also want control of their lives, of their data, of their information. And they certainly don't want to be surveilled.
It's just one last comment on this, and then we'll wrap it up with the future plans for Consumer Reports. Just even when I go in, the other day I went to a restaurant, and as I'm leaving, I look down at my phone, and of course Google is saying, how did you enjoy your visit? Will you rate this? And so on. I'm looking at it going, this drives me crazy. I don't enjoy this. I wish this would stop. But it seems to actually be getting worse.
There aren't many choices for you when 90% of our searches worldwide are going through Google. That's a lot of market concentration. And so that is part of the problem. We have very few participants on the digital platform.
I knew it was high. I didn't know it was 90%.
Yeah.
We have about a minute and a half left. Future plans for Consumer Reports for the digital platform and anything else?
Well, I've already talked about our television program. I've talked about the other digital tools that you have at your disposal, the web browser.
I'm excited about Ask CR, to be honest. I can't wait to try that.
And now you can actually online tell us the make of your car, and we will let you know if there's a recall on that car. That's been one of the most popular things is how do you, you know, being part of the CR community means you're going to hear from us first. And so we want to grow that community. We think there is a growing movement for putting consumers first. And we see that in Share Our Story. We now have the ability for you to tell us what's on your mind. And so I invite all of your listeners to come visit us, to share your story. What is it that you're struggling with? And how can Consumer Reports partner with you?
And you and I were talking off the air before. And for those who like to maybe piggyback off of others' subscriptions, you have to remember Consumer Reports is nonprofit, does not accept ads. Operates
yes.
on a tight budget, so if you're using the service, just like our friends out on Long Island who run the independent newspapers, if you're using the service, go ahead, pony up a few bucks.
Thank you. Being independent and impartial means we're relying on your listeners and the public to support us in this partnership.
That reminds me, our pledge drive is still going on, so... We have to keep things going around the clock here. Martha, thank you. I enjoyed this conversation.
Thank
I think
Ron.
You guys have done a wonderful job for many years. Congratulations on everything that you're doing and the best going forward.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Martha Teodoro is the president and the CEO of Consumer Reports, and we enjoyed this conversation. You'll be able to hear it this evening. That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. The digital editor is Carrie Frank, and Lopez is the producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you, caveat emptor, for being part of the full story. Martha Teodoro is with us, the president and the CEO of Consumer Reports. If you would like to join in the conversation, our email is tfs@wshu.org. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Full Story WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak. It is The Full Story. We're going to take one last break. We'll be right back.